The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today, T.J. Turner. He joins us in studio right here at WYSO. Welcome back, T.J.
Oh, thanks, Vic. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
T.J., last time we had you on the show was for your novel about Lincoln's Bodyguard, and this new book, Land of Wolves, is a sequel to that. I think we probably better talk about the first book. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah, it's probably good to rehash it a little bit and set the stage.
So let's do it. What's the first book about?
So Lincoln's Bodyguard is it's a reimagining of history. So it takes place where from the point of view of the bodyguard who saves Abraham Lincoln. So from that point on, history diverges and the bodyguard stops Booth from the assassination in Ford's Theater. And history then proceeds in a way that you may not expect. Instead of surrendering, the South becomes an insurgency type warfare going on, hasn't truly been able to capitulate. And then the North is set in this place where it's occupying the South. And then I added some kind of modern themes in there where there's an industrial consortium that's using this and taking advantage of it. They've kind of bought and sold the politicians. And on top of that, they've instituted this program called the draft, where they take the children from these towns that are rising up against the Northern occupation and moving them north to be free labor in the factories. So break up the labor unions, and we're kind of at the verge of the first industrial revolution in the United States. And so that's the backdrop. That's the setting. So it doesn't proceed how we all know, where the country healed and kind of got brought back together over a long period of time. But it's still in the state of warfare, and Lincoln is trapped in the presidency. And that's Lincoln's Bodyguard. That novel ends with Lincoln finally being able to resign. And Joseph and the president, along with Molly, who's Joseph's love interest and my other protagonist, they go off to Tennessee to kind of live their life out in peace, or so we think. And then the second book opens.
Tell us about Joseph. Who's he?
Yeah, so Joseph's he's a unique character. He is a half Native American, half white man. He was brought in to be Lincoln's bodyguard. He was identified and as someone who could kind of blend into the background of society because of his racial makeup. And he's the put in this great position to sort of be right with the president at the right time, and then sees Abraham Lincoln really as his father figure, more or less. And he's just a great, interesting character in my book.
And another key figure in the first book, and a little bit in the second book, is Alan Pinkerton. What's his role? And tell us who he was.
Absolutely. So Alan Pinkerton he's a absolutely fascinating character. And in fact, he's written a couple books, too, that are actually well written, and they're pretty exciting. But he's known as this detective, really one of America's first detectives, who goes after a lot of railway hijackings and robberies and solves those cases. But during the Civil War, he gets brought in with Abraham Lincoln and helps thwart early on an attempt against Lincoln in Baltimore right before the first inauguration. And so from that, he gets brought into the mix and actually starts running the first counterintelligence program in the U.S. And so he's the one who discovers Joseph, and Joseph works for Pinkerton, and that's how he's placed in trust with the president like that.
So you just diverged when you said he discovered Joseph, mm-hmm. because what you were talking about before really happened. That's the real history about Lincoln almost getting killed in Baltimore.
Hey, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, there was a real plot in Baltimore. There's been conflicting historical accounts, but it does look like it was fairly real. How serious it was, I think, is really the point of contention. But, a very tumultuous time in our history of our country, and getting the president to Washington, D.C. was no small matter. There wasn't the Secret Service back then. Abraham Lincoln actually signed the Secret Service into being an agency right before he passed away, before he died. And so there was no one really guarding the president. So you kind of went with your friends, and Lincoln did this long route to get to D.C. on his first inauguration, and that's where Pinkerton, who was hired by the railways, actually detected what he thought was this plot against Lincoln and brought it to their attention and devised a way to get Lincoln into D.C. without getting killed earlier on.
And the long route was necessary because there really were not any direct routes. There were all these little tiny railroads, and you'd get off one and get onto another one. Mm-hmm. And was Lincoln dressed as a woman as part of this? Was he disguised as a woman to get through Baltimore? Do you know anything about that?
I do. Actually, it's funny you mention it because I just turned in the third novel in the series, and a large portion of that has to do with the Baltimore plot. It's the prequel to everything. So it's actually Molly's story and how Molly gets brought into the Pinkerton organization. And so that all has to do – the first part of that book is all about the getting Lincoln to D.C. before the first inauguration. But he was dressed. He was dressed in like an overcoat and a big Scottish knit hat, and they snuck him out of a meeting in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and brought him to Philly and then down to Baltimore at night ahead of schedule so that the crowds wouldn't be able to catch him in Baltimore unarmed.
You've piqued my curiosity. Is the prequel going to be alternative history again, or is it going to stick more, adhere more to regular truth, regular history?
Yeah, so it'll be more of regular historical because in my series, the historical timeline doesn't diverge until Abraham Lincoln is saved.
Okay.
So it's going to be historical, and it weaves in some interesting plots. And like I said, it's focused on Molly's character, who – she's this fantastic female character in both Lincoln's Bodyguard and Land of Wolves, and this is going to be her story as being a female detective and a female spy ahead of the Civil War.
And it isn't just Joseph and Molly. There's some other family involved here. Can we talk about them?
Sure, please. So you mean Joseph's mother is involved and his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter is a key central piece to both Lincoln's Bodyguard and Land of Wolves, and you never meet her in Lincoln's Bodyguard. She's actually living down south with one of Joseph's, I guess you can call him his archenemy, was taken and kidnapped in order to turn Joseph against Abraham Lincoln and finish out what Booth started. And Joseph winds up not doing that, and that's how you find the start of Lincoln's Bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Land of Wolves picks up where Joseph is supposed to get his daughter back. His mother has gone south to retrieve her and bring her back to him, and his mother unfortunately is killed by the industrial consortium, these robber barons, and they're looking to impeach President Johnson because President Johnson has stopped the draft. And so Joseph's daughter becomes central to that for a portion of the book of how he's going to get his daughter back and kind of help heal the rift in the nation.
I like that because Johnson was almost impeached in real history, but for a very different reason. My guest is T.J. Turner. His new novel is Land of Wolves, The Return of Lincoln's Bodyguard. Okay, let's open this thing up. How does it begin, this new novel?
So the new novel begins in Tennessee. So Abraham Lincoln and Joseph and Molly, along with their more extended family, are living peacefully. Joseph has been... He's faked his own death at the end of Lincoln's Bodyguard, so he thinks he's safe from the industrial consortium. And the novel opens up with his mother coming to town, and she's been badly hurt and finally dies by the consortium. So they're looking for Joseph. They find out he's actually still alive, and his mother was supposed to retrieve his daughter. The consortium kidnaps the daughter, kills his mother, but sends her just enough time to give warning to Joseph that they're coming for him. And that's how it kicks off. And the consortium wants him to come back to D.C. to testify, to show the world that he's alive and help impeach President Johnson and get the draft reinstated. So that's how the whole novel opens.
Okay. How did you get the idea for this, for writing an alternative history and the various story strands that you're weaving together? How did this start?
It actually all started from the title, Lincoln's Bodyguard. And that came from listening to Terry Gross on Fresh Air one day. She had a show on. She said something about, wouldn't it have been a very different world if Lincoln had had a bodyguard? And the title just kind of flashed in my mind. And by the end of my drive home from work that day, I had come up with the first kind of draft of Lincoln's Bodyguard in my head. It took many more months to write it. But that's how it started. And then very slowly, these other themes started weaving in. I liked bringing in some more modern themes like the corruption of politicians by an industrial consortium or the insurgency like I had seen in Afghanistan, you know, being deployed there, having that be a part of what was going on in the backdrop in the South. So all those kind of modern themes meld together with the historical piece, and it made it a really interesting world for me to write.
And this third book that you alluded to, the prequel, is that completed?
It is completed. So I dropped it off with my agent about 2 weeks ago. She just sent yesterday back all the revisions for it. So there's a few things to fix. It's due to the publisher in April, and probably about a year from now it'll be coming out with any luck.
Does the agent make the revision suggestions, or do you have an editor doing that? How does that work?
It's both. So I have this fantastic agent, Liz Crocht, from the Kimberly and Cameron and Associates, from that literary agency. And Liz is – she's a great friend. She has this amazing read, I think, just from the volume of material that she reads across genres and things. And so she'll go through and just point out little places where the story may not have fit for her, may not have worked, and her suggestions are usually just spot on, so that I can kind of pick apart and fix things. And then the next step is it goes to the editor, and the editor does the same thing over again. But in Land of Wolves, I don't think I had any real big editorial fixes from my publisher. They were pretty good with it after Liz had gone through and helped me smooth things out. So it's great having extra sets of eyes on it. I usually have some beta readers out there who read through my manuscripts first and tell me how things are looking and working for me. So it's awesome.
You're apparently feeling a little more comfortable with this role as a novelist.
Yeah, a little bit. I think it comes by the time you get a third, I'm actually starting to believe I'm a writer. So I'm on the Book Nook for the second time. That was one of my goals, was to make it to the Book Nook once. And so being here twice, it makes it's fantastic. It's been a wild ride.
Well, I'll give you the same advice I give almost every other writer. Don't quit your day job. I'm just kidding.
No.
Are we allowed to talk about your day job? Is that top secret?
No. There's portions of it that are, but most of it's all right out in the open.
What do you do?
So I'm a split personality. I work for the Air Force. I'm a scientist for the Air Force in my most of my day job. And then I'm also a reservist for the Air Force. It's almost split 50-50 down the middle of the road there. On the reserve side, I'm a federal agent for the Air Force. So I do investigations, gotten deployed 4 times. I just had a year in Afghanistan. So it's an interesting life. I get bored of one job, I go to the other. I get bored of that job, I go back to the first one. But I work for the Air Force on both fronts.
When you say investigations, mm-hmm. what do you mean?
So I'm a federal agent for the Air Force, and we do felony-level criminal investigations.
Would these be of Air Force personnel?
It would be. You have to have a nexus to the Air Force in order to do those investigations. So it's something that's going on inside the Air Force.
Mm-hmm. So it's internal security in a way.
It is, yep.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's top secret, so we won't talk about that anymore. My guest is T.J. Turner, and the title, Land of Wolves. This is very significant. Wolves, there's almost a totemic aspect to wolves in this story. You really tie it together with the appearances of these magnificent creatures, don't you?
Yeah, it's as you saw in Lincoln's Bodyguard, there's a link between Joseph's native heritage and the lessons he's learned from his mother, and certainly the relationship to nature and to certain animals that feature in Lincoln's Bodyguard. And then as you come into Land of Wolves, he starts having the same relationship. There's a wolf that visits them in Tennessee that sort of kicks off that portion of the story. But it's also about the inner conflict with Joseph and him relating to his native heritage. And I think that's part of the book with him. He's half Native American, half white. He's lived in the white man's world, and he's never totally comfortable really in either place, right? And he hasn't really been exposed to the Native American way of life. And so Land of Wolves brings that full circle. He actually gets to travel out west and meet the Lakota of whom he is actually related to. So helps him heal that portion of himself.
And that is my favorite part of this story, is when they go out west, because here they are with Abraham Lincoln out west. And I can remember many years ago traveling out that way and going to the location where Custer's last stand took place.
Mm, yes.
And just what a haunted landscape that is. And you bring George Armstrong Custer into your story, and I love that.
Yeah, I absolutely do. It's so the whole second half of the book, the Joseph and the whole entourage go west. What was interesting is I had the first portion of the book written. It, you know, goes through New York City, goes through Washington, D.C. You kind of see the gangs in New York and things. And I hadn't had – I didn't really know how I was going to finish the novel, where it was going to go from there. And we took a family vacation out to Yellowstone. It was my in-law's 50th wedding anniversary, so we drove out there to be with them for a week out there. And my wife had this great idea of traveling on the Laura Ingalls Wilder route as we did it. So as we did the drive to keep the kids engaged, particularly my daughter Cheyenne is 12 and she's a voracious reader, and she had read all the Little House on the Prairie series. And as we're going through there, the second half just kind of I'm like, wow, this is what it was supposed to be. It's supposed to be this travel out west, and of course this at the same time as the book has said, this huge migration is happening in the U.S. where people are crossing. You know, they're crossing to the West Coast. They're going up the Bozeman Trail. So all of that gets incorporated in, and that's where Joseph meets the Lakota and comes face to face with his own native heritage.
What is the Laura Ingalls Wilder route? Is this a route that has locations where she lived or that she wrote about?
It's probably nothing official, although I think you can find it on websites. There's all the different sites where she lived And so we traveled to them, like we stayed on their homestead in the Dakotas, where we got to play soccer on the fields that Laura had played with her siblings. My kids thought that was really, really cool. And we camped out there overnight. They let you camp there. And it's just a fantastic experience. You get to see where they live. We saw where their first dugout house was. Went and followed it up a creek. You had to go for a small hike to find it. But it just kind of puts you right there with the novels. And
what state was that in? Sounds like Minnesota, maybe. Or
well, we started off
Iowa?
Through Minnesota, but I don't remember where the dugout was. Mm. It was either in the Dakotas or
it's
up
probably
in
further west because they made those sod houses
right.
out there,
yep.
right?
And we didn't hit every place that they lived, but just enough to see it and kind of excite the kids, and seeing them excited made me excited about the second half of the book, and the ideas flowed from there.
Your daughter's into the Ingalls Wilder books?
She is, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's read them several times through, so she reads everything she can get her hands on.
I remember being in fourth grade, and the books were available and out, but they had not made the TV series yet with Michael Landon, Little House on the Prairie. And my fourth grade teacher was obsessed with Laura Ingalls Wilder. In fact, she had developed a friendship with Laura Ingalls Wilder's daughter. And so during fourth grade, we had all the books. We had them read to us in class, and they were really fabulous. I was very impressed with them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're great reads. So it's a great snapshot of life back in the day.
It got me interested in fiction and nonfiction. My guest is T.J. Turner. His book is Land of Wolves: The Return of Lincoln's Bodyguard. Can we talk at all about is a spoiler to talk about this factory that they find?
No, that's kind of a
shock when that whole episode. That's kind of a shocker.
Sure. The factory in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So a portion of this is Joseph thinks his daughter has been taken by the consortium, and he thinks that she's probably put into this factory to do work like all the other children were. So the draft has been ended. The children were supposed to be returned home. Of course, New York State's kind of a New York City was a very interesting place during and after the Civil War. It's this hub of commerce. It almost was its own independent entity, separate from both the North and the South. But the consortium has headquartered themselves in New York, and they have this factory in upstate New York. So Joseph goes there to see if his daughter is there and finds that the factory is still operating with children who are in bondage. And they're children from the former Confederates. And he and Molly are then able to liberate them and get them out. But they take one of the children to D.C. He does wind up testifying in front of Congress, and he uses this child to show what's still going on. So it helps thwart the impeachment process against Johnson.
And Joseph, he's got some lethal qualities to him, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. So being a bodyguard, he would obviously have been trained in that manner. His backstory, which you learn a little bit in Lincoln's Bodyguard, is that he used to help his mother, who was a conductor on the Underground Railroad. So he had learned some things along the way about how to defend yourself if you need to, and then certainly was trained by Pinkerton afterward and defended the president. And and he's a little bit haunted too. So when his daughter is taken before Lincoln's Bodyguard kicks off, he does try to hunt her down in the South and try to find her, and he winds up killing a lot of people on his way to do it. Right, it's a big revenge portion, and then he's troubled by all those times, and so that's a part of his makeup.
And you also have fun with Abraham Lincoln. He has a secret. Are we allowed to talk about his secret?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's
it's a pretty wild secret.
It is. So, but it's rooted also in as much of history as I could get is that Lincoln really idolized Jefferson, right? And as we all know, Jefferson has an African American mistress and actually children with her, right?
Sally Hemings.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a whole branch of the Jefferson family that's African-American as well. So Lincoln truly did idolize Jefferson. He was one of the people that Lincoln looked up to. And so Lincoln, you find out in Lincoln's Bodyguard, after his wife has passed away, kill off Mary Todd. But Lincoln has a mistress, and she was a former slave, and so she's African-American. And then they have a daughter together. So that daughter is along for the trip in Land of Wolves, too, out west.
The long-suffering Mary Todd Lincoln. You just wrote her right out of the picture, huh?
I did, yeah. Poor Mary Todd.
Well, she was not a happy person from what I've read about her.
No, it definitely seemed like she was not.
She had a difficult life.
Did, absolutely. Yeah.
And so did her husband. You saved her husband from a terrible fate and kept him alive for this. And I'm wondering, in the prequel, is he the Lincoln we know from history?
Much more so, yeah. So in the prequel, I'm putting up it's a historical as opposed to a revisionist. You see him, and he's obviously a central and important figure. But the prequel really concentrates on Molly, and she interacts with Lincoln and first gets to know him. But he is the Lincoln of history that we know.
And tell us a little bit more about Molly, because Molly has her own portfolio as an agent.
She does. So what's interesting is that Pinkerton did actually use female detectives. And at the time, it wasn't something that was widely accepted, right? Women in espionage and those roles, men pretty much wrote them off, thought that they didn't have the capacity to do that kind of work. But Molly proves all that wrong. So she's a Pinkerton operative. She's brought to Pinkerton, as you learned in the prequel. But she's kind of got this sordid history, so she's used to kind of seduce men of power and get their secrets out of them. And she and Joseph have an affair after Joseph has saved Lincoln, and that's how their history together starts.
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. I'm Vic McCunis. And it's my pleasure to be joined on the program again by T.J. Turner. His book, Land of Wolves, the second book in his series, featuring Joseph, Lincoln's bodyguard. And as you mentioned, Joseph's half Native American. His mother was Native American. And when they get out west and they encounter the Native Americans out there who— many of whom ended up fighting George Armstrong Custer in the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Absolutely.
They see him and they recognize something about him, his lineage. They try to speak to him in their language, and he has these meetings with the Native Americans. And one in particular, he has a conflict with this gentleman, and he's a great character. Tell us about this warrior that he encounters.
So it's so Yellowfeather is the other character there who's very central to this character to the whole story. In many ways, he's actually the opposite of Joseph. So he's also a half Native American, half white, also the product of rape by a white man against a Native woman, and he has grown up and lived with the Lakota, whereas Joseph has been in the white man's world, right? So it's a very different mix. So they're almost opposite halves of each other. And so they find each other, and he is the translator. So he speaks Lakota and he speaks English. So he's able to make the translation between Joseph and the party and the Lakota people there. But he doesn't like Joseph at first, and I think that they have this conflict with each other, and they slowly grow to trust each other by the end of the novel. And it really is Joseph coming to terms with his own native heritage and accepting and embracing it, you know, just like the other character does to the white portion, maybe. But yeah, it's designed that way to have Joseph kind of meld back into his own people and understand himself better.
I like these dramatic meetings where he sits down and they pass around the pipe. Mm-hmm. And it's all very reminiscent of watching the old Westerns. You know, I used to love watching those when I was a kid, and to try to imagine what it was really like to mm-hmm. encounter these tribes and just the mystery of it all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the interesting things I get to do, so in my job for the Air Force, is I get to go out when I'm deployed and meet with the populations around base. And so I wind up in almost similar situations where I'm sitting down having lunch and tea and just discussing what the issues are and trying to relate one culture to another. So it to me, it was very drawing me back in again to my world. And of course, from the old Westerns, you see that. And unfortunately, if you read a book like Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, mm-hmm. So much of it seems like there was obviously we did terrible things to the Native American populations as a country. But on top of that, there's so much misunderstanding of cultural stuff that goes on. And you just see it in the dialogue that, you know, the narrative that Dee Brown brings with Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee or something like that. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
You just mentioned going outside the base and drinking tea. That sounds like maybe you were in Afghanistan doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, you know, meeting with people from a very different culture and trying to sit down and build commonality and understand one another and then, you know, understand the differences too and what everyone's concerns are. And that's something that I think we did a very poor job with the Native Americans on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Army didn't train its people back then like it does now. And even now it's a struggle and it's hard. So it's one of those things where you have these two cultures meeting and trying to understand each other. And Joseph's a bridge to that, right? He lives in both worlds a little bit. So
how's the food in Afghanistan?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Is it?
Yeah, it really is.
What's it like?
It's
a lot of goat.
There can be a lot of goat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the best meals I ever had were sitting at a small police station, just, you know, talking to the officers there, and they brought out what they were having for dinner that night and shared, and it was fantastic. It was this bean and tomato dish. Mm. It was just absolutely delicious.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country.
My guest is T.J. Turner. His book is Land of Wolves. And right now, the prequel is in the process of being turned into a third book in this series. What's your timeline looking like on that one?
So so that one's due in April to the publisher. And then usually it takes them about a year. So we'll go through, there'll be edits from my editor, and then the copy editor will go through, and then we'll see the proofs. And then by that point, it's about a year before the advanced reading copies come out and, you know, start distributing them to some readers. And then the full book should be published probably about May of 2019.
Will that also be on the Ocean View imprint?
It will be, yep.
Nice. So. Good for you. Well, it's been a pleasure having you back on the program.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
My guest has been T.J. Turner. His book is Land of Wolves, The Return of Lincoln's Bodyguard. And you'll probably want to read the first book first, just to kind of make that transition. I'm sure they stand alone very well, but I would suggest you read Lincoln's Bodyguard and then read Land of Wolves. I think that just is a good way to go.
It's good by me.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunes.